Welcome to AMO Kenzoku, episode 80. We are a group of four bubblegum crisis boomer otaku who talk about all things anime, manga, and other related topics we find interesting. The Kenzoku are...
Hey, I'm Sam.
Hey, all, I'm Mike.
Hi, I'm Dylan.
And I am tonight's host, Nick. We are recording today's episode on May the 14th, 2026, and the topic is Takopi's Original Sin. And with that, Hashing! So, as I usually like to do for these series-specific ones, I want to start off with kind of the, I guess, the production logistics of it. So... first and foremost, this is an ONA, if I did my research correctly. So basically, original net, I guess, animation. So the modern equivalent of an OVA, where it was not televised on TV, but it was available streaming via multiple platforms. It was produced by a studio I am not too familiar with called Anishia. I don't know if any of you have too much familiarity with them.
No, this is my first time hearing about them.
The again, with my very rudimentary research, all I could really see is, as far as what they've worked on relatively recently, was the reboot of Spice and Wolf in 2024, so same-ish time frame. But I will say, I think Takopi is considerably more impressive overall from a quality standpoint. Also directed by Shinya, directed and written, screenplay written by Shinya Ino, who I also am not super familiar with. Checking out his kind of works, I don't see a whole lot of director credits, a whole lot of episode director credits. Like, he did a lot of episodes for Dr. Stone, a little bit for Frieren. Also storyboarding, boarding, and episode directing for Made in Abyss, so I would say a strong kind of topical alignment there with Takopi.
Is that show good? I don't remember. We like that show, I forget.
It's all right. Yeah, we talked about it a little bit, I think. and that's about it. I should talk about the character designs as well. Character designs are Keita Nagahara, who's done a bit more stuff. He's done a boat ton of key animation for a whole lot of stuff over the last, let's call it, 10 to 15 years. Like, I'm just seeing, like, BNA, Boogie Pop and others, Darling in the Franxx, Delicious in Dungeon. What else am I seeing here? He did Witch from Mercury key animation, the Mobile Suit Gundam from a couple years back, Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid. He's worked on, like, a lot of high-quality stuff, and I think, again, that's reflected reflected in Takopi. It's six episodes of roughly half-hour-ish each, and I think that definitely was the sweet spot for it, for, let's call it, the content. Before I move forward to said content, anybody else want to add anything about the production or the logistics of it? I guess I could also mention, it originally was a web, I guess, manga on Shonen Jump Plus, written and illustrated by Taizan 5. It was, I believe, his or her, I don't know, their first, like, kind of officially published release, and formally came out in just two tankobon. So it was a short mini. It was like a short story. It was basically 16 chapters. So the entire content was intended to be pretty concise, which I think the ONA did a really good job of emulating it in pace.
Interesting that the English rights were, the digital stuff is Jump. What is it, Jump Plus, Manga Plus, the app? And Viz, I guess, only got the print rights? It's kind of strange. So if you want digital, you gotta go to the Shueisha app.
Huh, that's interesting. Maybe just a weird... Again, I don't really fully understand the relationship between Viz and Shueisha and Jump, Shonen Jump. So that's outside of my... my purview, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they're part owners, so it's always weird with
right.
this Jump Plus or Manga Plus thing is always still extremely weird. And nobody I know at Viz understands it either.
Oh, okay. Well, if insiders don't know, then I don't know if we're ever expected to really understand it.
I think they need some sort of happy ribbon to tie them all together and make them all be friends.
Oh, God. Okay, so here we go. So I guess before discussing the... Oh, so spoiler warning, big red and blue alarms. Like there's no way we can talk about this without spoiling literally everything about it. Also, I guess content warning, this series deals with incredibly controversial topics involving a lot of child neglect, abuse, and otherwise. So, yeah, definitely not for everybody, but also I would say it didn't cross any lines that I haven't already, straddled or jumped across myself already, personally. So nothing in it, I would say, shocked me. I don't think this is necessarily a shock value series. At least, I don't think that's its intention. There is definitely a very shocking, scene in the first episode. I'm not going to dance around that. I mean, you know, let's be... I child suicide is definitely not a common, let's call it, executed scene in anime. Has it happened before? I'm sure it has, but I think
To remember if Boogie Pop Phantom had.
Yes, Lane technically build jumping off a building, like that's definitely there,
but not quite the same.
No, not
closeness.
The relatability of this is what makes it, I think, really bold because it. Like, obviously, the concept of talk. Well, maybe let's rewind a bit. Anybody want to try to fall on the sword of giving a quick synopsis? I think Sam, maybe you should give it a go.
Okay, let me give I'll try a really brief one. The goofy alien octopus looking alien arrives at Earth with the mission to make people happy, if I remember right, and then. He finds this girl who's getting bullied at school, and he tries hard to help her in his naive way with his magic happy tools, happy gadgets. It's very much like a dark Doraemon.
Yeah.
So, all his tools end up being not... It's a very monkey's paw use of the tools, right? Like he thinks that the tool will do a good thing and ends up having bad effects instead. And the series is him basically dealing with the effects of the consequences of him trying to help and really just making things worse.
Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty concise, it's impossible to kind of summarize the show without just spoiling the entirety of it.
Yeah,
because that's kind of part of it. There's time travel involved, like time loops, right? That's a main theme. Like, oops, I screwed up, better rewind. And you know, initially they kind of in the first step they spin that as the main gimmick. So I think they use that as a way to kind of disarm the hey, we did something incredibly shocking and terrible, but it's okay because you know. Takupi can just rewind with the magic camera, right? Push the button and go back to that moment, and then you know he gets to try again. And it's kind of a really dark Groundhog's Day kind of thing at first.
Yeah,
but that also does not. I mean, I don't think I'll say about it because it's six episodes. No singular theme is overstays its welcome, in my opinion. I feel like the pacing is really good. A little bit breakneck at the very end. I feel like the end was a bit rushed.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I think...
Thoughts about that, though, we'll have to talk
about
that.
Yeah. I think we can talk about the entirety of it this episode, since it's only six eps. But they quickly kind of... it kind of just keeps, you know, going down the drain, so to speak, when, you know... and I believe it was end of ep 2 when the camera smash happens.
Yeah. I want to talk about that actually. The So like the first episode is all the basically the time loops, right? He has this magic camera that
right. There's poor Shizuka getting bullied even through no fault of her own. Right?
Yeah,
she seems to be completely the victim and sucking it up. And you know, obviously the whole thing with Chappie was like awful.
Yeah, yeah, extremely.
Yeah, God, that was for me. That was the hardest part to get through. Was that whole
oh
stuff
yeah.
With Chappie.
Well, yeah, yeah, and the hardest to get through of a lot of really hard stuff to get through.
Yeah, fair, yeah. Very fair.
Yeah, but like,
I mean, they had to do something in order to make the event that happened at least morally ambiguous, rather than.
Well, that to me is what broke her, right? Like,
yeah.
She goes from being a victim yeah. to becoming kind of like detached and kind of, you know, single-mindedly
yeah.
motivated from that point on, right?
Yeah. Yep. So when they were, so like, I had to refresh my memory because I watched this a few months ago now. And I believe what happened was she's getting bullied, the dog gets taken away, and basically, she takes the magic tool, the ribbon, and then goes and hangs herself. And so that is Chappie.
So that's a little, yeah. So I rewatched this past week to get the sequencing. So the hanging actually happens fairly quickly in Ep 1 mm-hmm. because you don't actually see the whole stuff with Chappie in Ep 1. You just see the outcome. Like, you just have to see that hard cut of suddenly next day. Like, Shizuka's all beat up. She's holding the collar. And,
okay.
you know, and Takopi's like, whoa, what happened? Why is your face all darkened? She's like, oh, I just had a fight. Oh, so when humans argue, do their faces change color? Like, you know, this just kind of is an indicator of, like, Takopi's extreme ignorance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, oh, well, I have the magical ribbon that, you know, if you tie the ends together, you become friends. And then she's like, oh, it's unbreakable. And then that's what cute clues she's going to say, hey, can I borrow that?
Yeah.
And then we see the end result. And yeah, like you said in your summary, this is the beginning of Takopi really trying to be, basically try to treat people's, you know, despair and unhappiness with tools versus with communication is kind of, I would say, the main, like, high-level theme that I got out of it.
Oh, interesting. I didn't.
At the end of it.
I didn't even think of that, but that's a really good observation.
So, I mean, there's a lot of, I'd say, high-level themes about Takopi that are, you know, to me are kind of, like, cautionary tales. Like, one, the adults all suck in the show. Like,
yeah.
They're all negligent, they're all abusive, both mentally, physically, all the above, in many ways. And that's the thing I think that made it feel so really awful and believable was all of the three. So it's really about the three main kids, right? So it's about Shizuka,
yeah.
Marina, and Naoki.
The thing that makes it hard for me is how believably broken the adults are. Like,
yeah,
it's not an exaggerated
yeah.
caricature. It feels like actual shit.
Yeah, exactly. Like, basically, I guess we call Shizuka the main character. They're kind of equally focuses on each of them.
It
but,
does kind of shift through them as you go through the...
Yeah,
yeah, although it still ends with her, kind of. Like, her
yeah.
and Marina definitely share. I think Naoki's definitely more secondary than them, but
mm-hmm.
I would say Shizuka and Marina are much more front and center just because of the nature of their oil and water relationship, right? So, for some context...
I like that freshness of... You didn't... It's such a heavy show, and they do keep moving between characters. Granted, you're getting different kinds of trauma with each character, but at least you're not dwelling too much on one the whole time.
And it's not like obviously we talked about a lot of the dark stuff where there is a lot of it, but it's not without moments of levity, right? I mean, Takopi himself is an absurdly designed caricature, right? Like
mm-hmm.
the octopus with the tiny little dot eyes with basically no expression, but is probably the most expressive character
yeah.
in the show. Was interesting overall, and then. You know, especially Marina, she had a lot of, like, exaggerated, like, facial expressions, like her eyes bugging out and stuff. Like, there are
mm-hmm.
definitely moments of levity interspersed within it, even though the over arching themes are incredibly serious and dark. I think it made it, it made it so that it wasn't like, didn't feel like it was constantly a drag. Whereas I feel like some shows just try to say, you know what, we're just going to be nothing but miserable all the time. And so it's like, okay, that gets a little bit, you know, like one note can, even if it's, you know, edgy or whatever, it is kind of is old after a while. But I feel like Takobi really jerks you around, like kind of like gives you moments of, you know, lightness in between the really, really heavy moments. You know, like especially revolving around like, you know, like suicide and murder. So
yeah, I liked that the character's emotional state and roughness, rawness was expressed in the art style, like that got more polished or rougher depending on how things were going for people, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say it now, straight up, like quality wise, this show is elite to me. Like, it had no right to be animated as well as it was. Like, just little animations, like when like one of the kids would like stumble and trip and kind of do that thing where they like trip and put, you know, one hand on the ground while they try to like catch their balance. Like, it didn't need to have that level of detail, but they went for it because, you know, whatever reasons, like, you know, artistic integrity or whatever, it, the end result was phenomenal. And again, I think a big bonus of it being just a 6-episode, you know, tightly scripted, budgeted series, I think really, really helped.
Not having the TV air deadlines looming over their head. Yeah. They could probably take their time.
Exactly. So, you know, I think that really helped because it kept me, you know, I kept my eyes glued to the screen, even when, you know, there was some hard stuff to watch for sure. But I guess going back on track to kind of working through it. So yeah, ep one, you kind of, you know, you get this very herky jerky, like, hey, I'm Takobi, I'm here to help. And then he's like, oh wow, you look really sad, here's a tool to help. And then like, uh-oh, the tool didn't help. And then he's like, well, this tool might rewind, tries again, and, you know, does the Groundhog Day. And then get to the whole thing with Chappie in ep two and realizes, oh, this is the thing that caused, you know, Shizuka-chan to, you know, want to end her life. So Takobi like tries all those different routes, like, oh, let's try taking Chappie this way or that way, and Marino's just like obsessive need to find her and, you know, to basically trap Shizuka and Chappie in that situation, like basically made it impossible for them to escape the end result.
I will say, to the point of like the show not dwelling too much, like right about, you know, the middle of episode two, I'm getting kind of tired of the time loop stuff. You know, I don't know how they can keep this up. And like right about then, you know, the camera gets broken and they kill Marina. And that's like, oh, okay.
Well, specifically Takobi, you know, launches himself at Marina, who's as far as we can tell, is about to basically stab Shizuka with a mechanical pencil. So he lunges at her and, you know, you just hear this frighteningly authentic crunchy noise and, you know, screen goes black, and then you just see the end result, which is the camera is covered in blood and Marina is, you know, now deceased on the ground with a giant head wound. And then you start to see the series get warped even further because Shizuka starts to cry with tears of joy, thanking Takobi for killing him. Like, oh god, that's when my eyes went wide the first time. I'm like, my goodness. And just, you know, this is what happens to, you know, children who aren't with trauma, who aren't, you know, don't get to a chance to deal with it properly. And I feel like that is definitely when Shizuka fully detaches from, let's call it, normal social norms. And they literally just waltz out of the forest, and they would have just left Marino's corpse there if it wasn't for Azuma, who's basically becomes the third character in this tale. And he basically is the one that is, let's call it, the brains of the operation, where he's like, okay, at first he's trying to be rational. It's like, we have to cover this up. We can't cover this up. We have to, you know, go to the police. And then Shizuka starts to, this is where things get even more toxic, and she starts to kind of like manipulate him, right? Like, he's like, hey, you know, it'd be really great if you could help me out here. And he, you know, is just starved for some sort of attention from somebody because his mother is, you know, abusive in a very different way, right? Like in like a, I don't even know how I could describe it. Like, I'm not a therapist. So she's just like, it's almost this negative reinforcement stuff, right? Like, oh, your older brother could do it. Why can't you? And I think that's what really cut deep for me was I relate so much to Naoki because I had so much of that sort of trauma for myself being the younger sibling of an overachieving older sibling.
Yeah.
Not everything was one-to-one, but
yeah,
but obviously, but then, you know, so I feel like he gets smitten, right, with Shizuka, and then kind of, she basically convinces him to help them cover it up, right? And of course, by some Deus Ex Machina, Takopi actually has a useful device for this one instance where you have to cover up a murder, or he has that capsule that's like, it can scale and you can basically preserve anything you want in it. So, you know, it becomes her coffin, which was also really morbid because it's this bright pink, you know, and yellow happy gadget thing, and they're using it to pull the dead body and conceal the dead body.
Did it really help that much? Like, I can't remember. What was the purpose of preserving the body?
It did, because I think it helped. But Dylan, yeah, you seem to not think so.
I don't know. I thought the purpose of that thing, I guess I misunderstood, was to like change the size of the thing. So I'm like, oh, you can go and like make the body smaller and be like, well, that's useful. But it was like, no, it was just like put it in there and now you have this giant coffin thing that isn't actually any better and is probably worse because it's even larger thing that's even more poorly buried.
So here is the one thing, though, is one other specific feature about it is that it perfectly preserves anything you put in it, which means that dating the time of death becomes basically impossible because through episode 3, right, is basically the next kind of arc where they decide, hey, let's have Takopi impersonate, right? Because one of the devices, we didn't really talk about it, but Takopi has this little, I think it's a flower that lets him basically, if as long as you have a piece of DNA from anybody, Takopi can basically become them, right? From in like a physical sense with the voice and everything. And they do that with Marina. So they say, okay, you have to pretend, you have to stop saying pee after everything because you have to talk like her, right? That's one of the main things of that kind of, you know, was the boiling point for the end of Ep 3. But that the whole, at the end of Ep 3, right, the surveying team finds the body, but they say, oh, it was, they say, oh, it just happened because, again, they because of the device, you know, however many weeks it was, they didn't actually have the real time of death. So I think that in essence, it, from that perspective, it air quotes helped. Ultimately, I think it still led to the same result, which is now the whole town is suspicious. It's a tiny town up in, I believe it's in Hakodate is where it takes place, up in Hokkaido.
Yeah, it's up in Hokkaido somewhere. I wasn't quite sure exactly where, but yeah.
Somewhere, definitely up in rural Hokkaido. And so, of course, you know, now Naoki panics, just like, oh god, now we have to lay low. And she's like, oh, well, is this going to affect our ability to go to Tokyo and find my dad? Because the entire rest of the series, right, she's basically single-mindedly obsessed with getting to Tokyo to see her dad, but more specifically because she's told, oh, Chappie's with her dad now, which is, you know, as we all know, is not the case. Chappie was probably euthanized for attacking somebody. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, she has to hold on to that hope, right? And
I will say, I was kind of... Even I was holding out a little hope that Chappie was still alive.
I think we all were. I mean, can we all agree Chappie is probably the most accurately animated dog in anime history? Like, I'm trying to think of another dog in anime that's just, like, looks and acts like a real dog.
It was pretty accurate, like, I'll say.
Chappie was the closest I've seen. I'm trying to think of other ones. Like, obviously, there are some that are hilariously not accurate, like Bond from like Spy Family or like Pero Pero from Karakano is literally like a caricaturized dog, but
yeah, different purposes.
Different purposes, yeah. But anyway, Going back to the whole, so, you know, in F4 is basically them realizing the jig is up, cover up can't happen anymore, and now it's just trying to figure out how to, you know, take prying eyes off of them. But of course, Shizuka is basically turning into a sociopath, not too unlike her mother. And
yeah, this is like, in this part of it, it was interesting that it was like, throughout the Marina stuff, you're learning about how much her life sucks, and then Shizuka is slowly becoming the villain, basically. And I thought that was really interesting too. Like, again, like the, them keeping things moving, like nothing is staying static.
Yeah. Well, what I love is the characters are all gray, right? There's not a single. Oh, even Takopi, I think, is debatable. I think Takopi's intentions were always good, but I mean, this is kind of runs into the overarching theme, which I'll throw the question out in a bit. Once we get towards the conclusion, since we're rapidly kind of accelerating towards it. So, basically, Shizuka, for lack of a better term, blackmails, not the right word, convinces too soft, but basically convinces Naoki to take the fall for her, right? Which I cannot comprehend how, you know, the thought processes involved in, but for both parties to get to that conclusion. But
I mean, they kind of show you, right? Like, I mean, and you said it earlier, right? He's desperate for some kind of attention from
I would, yeah, for sure. I think it's also a form of gaslighting, for sure, that she did to him. And yeah, but definitely agree. I think it was, even if it was not the right attention, it was still to him positive attention, right? Like, she even does the super, you know, backhanded thing of, like, you know, holding his hand and, like, kissing him on the cheek. And at that point, you know, it's over for him. And he's, you know, ready to turn himself in, and he's broken and feels like he can't, you know, do anything. And then, of course, I would say the only named character who I would say is probably, like, pure and, I would say, like, righteous in the entire show that they're in it is Junya, Naoki's older brother. Because yeah, he's actually a pretty stand-up person the entire time. Like, is he Mr. Perfect? Yeah. Is he really the type of person that, depending on which social circles you were in, you either loved him or you hated him? Probably. But overall, he's a good person, right? Like, it was kind of
nice to have a character that was just good.
Normal.
I kept expecting some kind of, like, dark secret to come out and him to be actually he's also gray and has a bad side that you just didn't see before.
Well, there was that hallucination that Naoki had, right? When he's standing about to exit and Junior comes up to him and say, hey, what's wrong? And he's like, you know, hallucinating, like, he's like, oh, so you're the one that did it? You're going to try to ruin, you know, the family name and my career? And then, you know, mm-hmm. he shakes him out of it and realizes that's not at all what's happening. And he's trying to talk to him as a good boy. He's like, you know, you can talk to me. You can tell me anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Naoki just unloads all the years of his frustrations on him, right? Mm-hmm. And Jun just absorbs it all and just says, I hear you. And that's all he basically had to say. And that's when Naoki, I think, kind of snaps out of it to an extent. But he still basically takes the fall for it. But I think at that point, he almost feels, again, this is gaslighting to taking effect, but he feels like he's basically equally culpable, because even if he wasn't the, you know, the actual killer, you know, the fact that he was an accessory to it, I think to him was just as bad. So I think that's where he was trying to justify taking the blame for it himself. This is me projecting, of course. I don't know if the rest of you agree with that or not, but at that point, then, you know, you don't really see a lot of what happens after that, right? You just see that the clinic is closed, the mom's clinic is closed, and you hear people, you know, whispering behind their backs about, oh my gosh, he was such a good boy, and, mm-hmm. you know, police think that he was coerced into it and all that, and, you know, it's kind of, You can see where things are going. And this is where my stomach kind of churned for the older brother. It's like, oh, the way Japan is, there's no way he's going to be able to have a normal career if his younger brother is convicted of murder. Like, that's your possibility of having a normal life in Japan is over.
Mm-hmm.
And I speak from a kind of firsthand experience. I guess I'll kind of derail to talk anecdotally. So not the same, but in a similar vein. So I have I have a cousin who is basically in line to become police chief of Hiroshima City because he literally married the police chief's daughter, mm-hmm. and he's like a model, you know, officer, all that stuff. He's like the head of their cybersecurity stuff now, so he's pretty high up. But a number of years ago, my youngest cousin, who at the time lived, I believe, in Osaka, he's kind of the more carefree lifestyle person. Like, he just was a kind of a freeder, just worked a bunch of part-time jobs, didn't know what he wanted to do for a career, which is, by American sensibilities, not a big deal. By Japanese sensibilities, a little bit not as good. Well, he ended up getting a part-time job that was kind of with a gray company. Like, mm-hmm. the mechanism was, because, you know, Japan is the nation of bicycles and also the nation of abandoned bicycles. So yeah. the idea was he would drive a truck around and pick up bikes that were tagged as impounded by the police. Because that's how they work. They tag them and when they're around too long and they get impounded.
Uh-huh.
And what he was told was, oh, we impound those for the police. Well, apparently that wasn't the case. And so he technically was stealing those bikes. And so he didn't do any time, but he ended up going to trial for it. And he just said, yeah, this was, he told the truth. He's like, I just thought it was a job. I didn't realize this was a crooked company. It seemed legit to me.
Mm-hmm.
But he got so much flack from all of my aunts and uncles because, like, how could you do this? How could you jeopardize his career? He's don't you know he's a police officer? Like, they were blaming him, like he ruined my other cousin's career, which he didn't. But he was just being lambasted as, like, you just destroyed his career for doing something, even if it wasn't intentional.
Right.
So, you know, just the fact that guilt by association is so strong in Japan, and that's one of those cultural, like, unless you really get that cultural aspect of it, I don't think you necessarily understood the severity of the admission of Naoki at the time, because mm-hmm. obviously Junya was set to be, you know, the successor of everything, right? He was going to be the one that takes over the hospital and become the best of blah, blah, blah. That's definitely out the window now, especially when your, you know, sibling is
and now
implicated
he knew
like
that too, right? Like,
he had to, yeah. He definitely, because you get a bit of that in Ep, jumping a bit, but you get a bit of that in Ep 6. So, I guess try to speed up. So Ep 5 goes, I would say goes relatively as you expect. So they go to, for the very beginning, they go to Tokyo. There's like a montage of them walking through Tokyo. Within like, what, 3 minutes, they're at the dad's door. Door opens and dad's holding another child. And you immediately, like, this is a fantastic way of show, don't tell, right? Like, in that 2 second scene, you know exactly what's going on, mm-hmm. right? Like, dad didn't just move to Tokyo. He abandoned Shizuka and her mom and started a whole new life in Tokyo, which I hear, which from my understanding is not all that uncommon either in Japan. And he's just like, hey, Shizuka, what the hell are you doing here? And, you know, he has two kids and another dog. She's like, oh, I want to see Chappie. And he's like, that's not Chappie. And then you don't even see what he does, right? He just tries to kind of brush it off because his two other daughters are like, oh, who's this? He's like, yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And just kind of closes the door on her. And it's like, you just are in disbelief. And then again, there's a card cut to her and Takupi under the bridge. And she's basically having kind of a full-scale mental breakdown at that point. And this is where it starts getting super clear to me on what's going on, because she raises up a rock, right? And then how I interpreted it was she used the rock to end Takupi. And then through whatever happy Seijin magic, he ended up back in the original time loop, which was actually meeting Marnino for the first time. But I don't know if that's what actually happened. So this is where I want to ask the rest of you, like, how did you guys interpret that part of episode 5? Because I feel like that's where things started to be less lucid for me, and there's a lot more interpretation involved. So I'm kind of curious on what you all thought happened there.
I don't know. I took it as more of a, like, knocked out or happy Seijin concussion protocol thing. Because it seems like, you know, that at various times that Takupi was getting beaten with stuff and things, and doesn't really seem like you can hurt a happy Seijin physically. Mm-hmm. That's where I went to with my thoughts there, but I can see the other interpretation.
I'm actually leaning strongly towards your interpretation. Like, my, what I was thinking was my initial gut reaction, but after thinking about it more, I think your explanation makes a lot more sense. And also, when you think about the beginning parts of Ep 6, I think it also lines up to be that being the main, the explanation as well. Mm-hmm. Because, back half of...
Taco P was trying to remember why it couldn't get back home for the entire show, so...
Right.
Definitely. So,
and that loop is closed when you actually see the, so you, I guess time forward, because technically the timeline starts in 2022 when Marina's in high school, right? And then you see Taco P again, and you see kind of a similar dynamic, but this time Marina being Marina, she's a lot more like Asuka-like. Like, she's just constantly beating the crap out of Taco P and kicking him around and stuff, mm-hmm. but still tolerating his existence and still keeping him around. And you still see all the same dysfunction, right, with her mom, especially.
Yeah.
And then you see all the stuff happening with, you know, within, what, a handful of minutes. Like, she starts dating Naoki, and then Shizuka comes back, and then he's smitten with her still, so he breaks up with her right away. And then mom has a mental breakdown because she's like, what did you do? How did you already lose him? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, is projecting on her, and then she had this thing of, oh, of course it's my fault, because, like, you're damaged goods, right? Because you see the scar on her face, right? And that, again, it just goes, everything, like, escalates really, really, really fast to the point of, you know, basically Marina about to be, you know, be stabbed by her mom, and then she has to, you know, she has to defend herself, is kind of what I interpreted it as. And then you get that really jarring, like, dichotomy, almost like you literally are seeing Marina standing in a pool of her mother's own blood, and, you know, in shock. And Atakopi is like, wait a minute, I can fix this, all I have to do is kill Shizuka, right? And you see him, like, get into the rocket, and, like, that scene is animated so well, right? Like, the way the rocket's building up, mm-hmm. you know, steam and everything, and just, like, Marina's standing there kind of shell-shocked, and, like, it's such a bizarre scene. And then he takes off, and then, you know, of course she, it's pretty obvious she ends her own life there. And then Taco P, this is where I wanted to pose the question to you. So he goes back home, right? And he goes to Mama Taco P, and says, you know, I want to use the big clock, because they have this big clock tower that lets you time travel, basically, right? To mm-hmm. any point in time. And she tells him at that point, you've committed the gravest sin. And this is where I want to ask you all the question. What is Taco P's original sin?
Yeah, that's where I was also not... I don't have a good answer there. I'm trying to figure out, like, what... Was it literally just trying to make people happy that are unhappy? Like, is it more like a philosophical thing? Or was it literally a violation rules? Like...
I think you're on the right track. I don't think there was a rule.
Doesn't he say in the beginning something about, like, I'm not supposed to let you use these things, or I'm not supposed to, like, let them out of my sight, but he gives it to Shizuka? And...
Yeah, you're not supposed to let anyone use a happy thing.
But remember,
timeline-wise,
at that point where he gave Shizuka the ribbon, mm-hmm. he already had gone back and committed the sin.
Yeah,
that's true.
So I agree with that.
This is where... And then there are some theories like, oh, it's because he was going to travel back in time to kill. But I don't think that's it, because there was specifically a line where the big octopus bomb says, what does kill mean? Like, she doesn't even know what that... So there's no way for her to know that's a sin. So my theory is that... And I think this is kind of the idea of what happens at the end, is Taco P's original... It's kind of philosophical. His original sin is trying to help people without understanding them, without talking to them first. He just tries to see, oh, you're sad, here's a tool to fix it. Like, that's not how it works, right? People are very complex. There's no such thing as a tool that will fix somebody's trauma, especially if you don't even know what the root cause of that trauma is, right? And we see throughout the entirety of these six episodes that each of the three main characters has very deep-seated trauma that's really complicated, and honestly, they all need a lot of therapy to really unpack that.
I feel like that's true thematically, but, like, I don't know if that makes sense to me like in universe, you know? Like
I get that. And to be fair, I did a lot of reading, and as far as I know, nobody affiliated with the creation of the property, the author, has never like written down this is what his, like, it definitely is left to interpretation, I think. And I think that's fine.
Yeah, I think that's great.
That's a very, honestly, that's a very Eva style. I think there's a lot of parallels to Eva in between this and Eva, honestly. The three main characters honestly remind me so much of Rei, Asuka, and Shinji in many ways. Not completely, but a lot of the ways they behave remind me a lot of those three as well. And also to your point, Sam, there is definitely an inspiration of Doraemon as well. I do definitely think Takopi is kind of a Doraemon analog because of his, because in a sense his cuteness, he's kind of tries to be a problem solver with his gadgets, and that's the whole theme of Doraemon, right? He's like, oh, you have a problem? Here's a Doraemon gadget to fix it, and that's not how life really works, right?
It's kind of like how Utena is to Sailor Moon, Takopi is to Doraemon.
In some ways, I can see that, yeah, analog. But that's how I interpret it, is that Takopi, and I think that's why at the very end, Takopi actually realizes that, and this is where the end, the Deus Ex Machina of the end is kind of, I have a few issues with, because it's like, well, if I sacrifice myself, the camera will magically repair, and I can use it one more time. And I'm like, really? That's how they're gonna wrap this all up?
I didn't like that.
I'm okay with them wanting to do a one more, like, hey, here's the message, because the whole thing towards in Ep 6, where, you know, once Takopi is gone, you rewind back to the point of Shizuka and Manina at conflict again, but this time, they, you know, Manina's being Manina and Shizuka's being Shizuka, but then, they have a moment of connection, even if it is a Takopi sketch that they're both like, what the heck is this? But they have a moment of connection, and they start to actually, like, communicate with each other instead of just Marina berating Shizuka as being a parasite, and which was, of course, a behavior she learned from her dad, right? Because her dad always called her mom a parasite. And, you know, calling her a homewrecker, which, you know, it's not necessarily abjectly wrong, but it isn't Shizuka's fault, right? So
I just found that, like, the series did so well up to that point that, yeah, just kind of Deus Ex Machina it all away was very unsatisfying.
But at the same time, I almost was okay with it because Takopi in himself was almost a Deus Ex Machina, like, Deus Ex Machina character encapsulating that concept, almost.
But they had set up rules for the world, and he kind of played by those rules. And granted, you know, it's all magical and stuff like that, but it just, everything else going up to that point, while convenient, it, like, all served a purpose to move the story forward, and this other one just felt like, well, I don't really know how to solve all these problems I've created, so, like, story-wise, so I'm just going to snap my fingers and they're all solved. Like, I don't know.
I don't disagree, but I think it was because the author wanted to really convey a message of, you know, you need to communicate in order to understand each other, and then when you understand each other, you can overcome your trauma. Maybe not completely, but you can at least move forward with it. And I think that was kind of the main mess, because at then, you know, at the very, very end, right, it fast forwards back to 2022 when they're in high school. And now it looks like Marina and Shizuka are at worst frenemies and probably really good friends that just rib each other all the time because they're, you know, and Chappie's a lot. But of course, there's the tear joke, but Chappie's like old now, right? He's just tied up in on the post, and they're shopping for stuff. And then, again, they're like, oh, look, that pen, what does that look like? And they say, whatever that weird Saturn cat thing is, that worthless thing that Takopi had. I don't disagree that the, you know, to get to that point was definitely a kind of a weird Deus Ex Machina. I just need to make up a mechanism to get to this point, because author couldn't figure out a way to get there within the rule set that was developed.
Yeah, like, not only did they go back in time in a kind of nonsensical way, even in the series, But like, now that they're back in time, they resolve it in a way that doesn't quite make sense. Like, you know, why are they friends now magically? Like, they give the kind of impression that it's like the spirit of Takopi or something, their memories or whatever, but I don't know.
I don't think it was nonsensical. I think it was more that they used the let's call it the lingering memories of Takopi as the one thing they could potentially relate to initially, and then the more they started to talk, the more they realized they're more similar to each other than not. Like, they both realized, huh, we both come from some pretty messed up family backgrounds, and I think that's when they were able to understand each other. That's how, at least, again, that's how I interpreted it. And then more importantly was that for Naoki was that he like, for me, it's not all relationships are necessary. Some relationships are toxic, and I think for Naoki, being around Shizuka was intrinsically toxic to him. And so distinctly at the very end, instead of approaching her, he was talking with the other groups of kids, and they're like, oh, you have a PS4 and Monster Hunter, we should all play. And he's like, sure. And he decide, and then that's when you see the severing of that connection, right? Like, he intentionally does not engage Shizuka, and honestly probably ends up being better for it. So I again, this is me trying to really read deep into what the messaging is at that point, because I think the rules were all broken apart for me, so I stopped trying to consider it based off of what rules are established.
Yeah, I think I like your read of the messaging, and I think that's true. I just, you know, don't feel like they earned it.
Yeah, and I think that's totally valid. I won't say the series is perfect, but I would say, given everything else I saw last year, this is still probably my favorite.
Oh yeah,
anime from last year.
Like, if you can stomach the material, I highly recommend it to anybody. For sure. It's still very good.
Ep 1's a tough hurdle to climb, for sure. But
on that,
I mean, yeah.
My first time, like, because we already said we were doing this, and like, it took me, like, I stopped and then continued like 3 or 4 different times to get through episode 1, because I was just like, oof, okay.
Yeah.
It's topic aside, it's just the fact of the whole scene was traumatizingly long, right? Like, just describing it really gives me goosebumps and shivers. Like, it's just so unsettling, right? I mean, it's meant to be. It's an unsettling topic, but the fact that it was like, I didn't time it, but it was probably, what, a 90-second scene?
Yeah, it wasn't the quick cut. It was, no, you're here.
It was there. You were forced to look at it, and Takopi, you were like, you were there with Takopi trying to process what happened. Like, we as people know what happened, but we're there watching Takopi try to process what just happened.
Some other things, like, I actually just rewatched episode 1 tonight with my wife, who is
I would love her input on there, having kind of done this in real life to some extent.
So
like,
I had mentioned it before. I was like, oh, this show's really good, and like, it deals with like a lot of really heavy stuff like this. And she was kind of like, yeah, well, that's what I deal with like at work. She was like, yeah, I could do it, it's fine. And we finished watching the episode, and her reaction was, do not make me finish watching this show. She's like, it is like too real. Like, everything I see there is like very real, and things that I have like seen and dealt with, like,
I'm sure
professionally.
And she doesn't need to see this. She doesn't need to see it in her, what? Like, air quotes, entertainment, right?
No, I mean, I
like,
was kind of curious why that it. She was like, because I don't think she was. I'm not sure what she was expecting exactly, but I think she was kind of like, all right, well, let's see what this anime thing is. She watches stuff, but not as, you know, she's not a level 9 otaku, but, you know, she watches stuff. And I don't think that I'd said, I was like, this show is pretty intense. So I was like, it's really good and really intense. And I was like, she was like, okay. And then I think she was like, at the end of the episode, she was like, yeah, that was too much, basically, which I completely understand. Like,
I
think watching the first episode again for the second time, having finished it, it was a little bit easier, just, I think, because I kind of knew that the ending that they gave us was, you know, we got, you know, as much as things could be, it was like, we got the happy ending.
Yeah, and for me, it was not just the happy ending, but the fact that it finally breached the topic of what needed to happen, which was that they needed to hash it out. Like, yeah, you sometimes just have to have the crap. And actually, rewinding just a bit, middle late part of Ep 6, like right before Takobi makes his final sacrifice, is where we finally see, for the first time, we see, like, basically Shizuka lose it, right? Like, you see her get, like, her face contort in anger, and she just starts to beat the tar out of Takobi, right? Mm-hmm. And this is, it's kind of healthy. Like, she needed an outlet for that, all that anger and frustration, right? Because what's inferred is, you know, she'd just come back from, you know, the failed excursion to Tokyo, and she feels massively betrayed. And then this is probably the next hardest scene for Much.
It's funny
was that
you,
montage.
You thought of it that way, because to me that more felt like her turning into even more of a psychopath.
No, I mean, because right after that is when Takobi said, you know, I'm sorry, I can't fix it. He just kept apologizing. And this is when Takobi, I think, started to get that he can't fix it, but he doesn't mean he can't be around to help, because then you get the montage, right, of her walking with Takobi, and it's heartbreaking. Right? She's just crying her, you know, crying her heart out for, you know, this whole montage, and they're just walking and walking and walking, and then she opens up that notebook that she was making, and there's like a 500 yen coin taped to it, says use for emergencies only, and she goes and buys, you know, some bread and shares it with Takobi. Right, and it's inferred they're doing this for a pretty long time, and then finally, you know, they get back to that place with the concrete pipe, and you know, Takobi's like, hey, actually, I think, you know, this is I think I found a solution, so this is goodbye. And then you see she's got kind of have this revelation of like, no, I can't, like, she has nothing left, right? And to her at that point, Takobi is all she had left. And of course, now, you know, Takobi realizes that he has a chance to make everything good, but it's, you know, but it requires breaking Shizuka's heart. So, I don't know. I thought that was some really interesting, like, she probably had the most character development out of everyone, as far as just going through this whole cycle of trauma, like, detachment, you know, sociopathy, looping back into, you know, reality and anger, and then going back into becoming like a caring, feeling person again. That's at least how I looked at it.
I don't feel like she ever got better, like, until, you know, the end, and it loops around and we're basically resetting, right?
I think right before the reset she did, because that's when Takobi says, oh, I have to, basically he's saying, oh, I have to kill myself, but I can make it all good, and she's like, no, I can't lose you too. And you, and like the way she expresses it, the way she breaks down, the how she's, you know, how heartbroken she's. To me, that's how I interpreted it, was she finally snapped out of this obsession of trying to get to Chappie and doing anything possible, like, you know, consequences be damned. Like, she actually cared again about somebody, and now that somebody's going away, and that was breaking her heart. That's how I looked at it.
Hmm.
What are your thoughts, Mike? I know this was probably a pretty challenging series for you to get through.
I'm a little more on side on that, I think. Like, I'm not sure if I totally saw the understanding there on hers, but I could certainly be wrong on that too.
I mean, it's open to interpretation, so, you know.
I think Ep 6 definitely leaves a lot of things more open ended, like, to how you want to interpret it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other good thing about the series is that it's not spelling everything out for you, really, right? Like, there is a lot of show don't tell, which is
definitely
really one of the things that makes this so excellent.
Yeah, and the dynamics of the characters falling, you know, repeating the way that their parents act even at their young age,
yeah,
feels real and raw too.
Incredibly.
Like, they're not just becoming awful people, they're becoming specific types of awful people if they don't, you know, head off the paths that they're on. And they may still become those types of awful people anyway, because it's hard not to become your parents to some respect.
And I think that was a good... There's a lot of really good things that are done in this show. And I think probably number one for me is that there is a lot of, like, interpretation and openness of like, hey, what actually happened here? Some of the spots, some things are just like, okay, this A to B to C, but other parts is like the important parts are up to your interpretation. The other part is that it's all entirely the parents' fault, which is...
Yes.
Which is...
Every adult failed at every step in the show. That is one thing I am certain of.
The other ones, the other failing adults you see throughout and, like, don't see throughout are, like, well, literally any other adult and, like, the useless teachers were literally on...
Teachers.
On Kuze's, Shizuka's desk, like, and her stuff, they have, like... scrawled and destroyed all of her stuff continuously.
I mean, the bullying is painfully apparent, right?
It's not like a little bit or like, oh, this person's just, it's literally they've scratched die onto her desk and the teacher is just like, oh, I don't know. Maybe it's a fun game. Yeah. It's like, oh God, you're worthless. And I think the other part that is, and I think we talked about is like, just like the production of the whole thing is so great and so well done. Nick, you said it earlier there, yes, where there's like the different scenes. Like it's one of those shows where different scenes go into like completely different art and like keyframe animation style and everything, which is really cool and not done commonly these days. That's almost like an old like OVA thing. You'd be like, oh, well, you can see when it switched from key artist A to key artist B because the whole thing kind of changed a whole bunch, but it's still like it matches. It's just totally different, which is really, really cool and hard to do. I think the other thing that this kind of reminds me of from a lot of, I think, you know, just the best ways is like Look Back, which was another one that I think had a lot of that very stylized stuff that was just so well done for anime and animation and themes there. I'm quite curious how it diverges from the manga. Like, I mean, I feel like with the manga being a two-volume thing that came out in 2021 or whatever, which is a while ago, quite a while ago for any of these things, like, to then be adapted. Obviously, somebody read it and was like, this is incredible, we need to do it. But I'm quite curious on how different and how much stuff was, you know, changed, expanded, done differently from what was in the manga.
From, I haven't read it, but I mean, it's only two volumes I made, but from what I've heard, is it pretty much is a one-to-one adaptation with no content changing, but maybe certain things were truncated to focus on other dimensions a bit more. But basically, yeah, there's no like major plot difference.
That's what I would expect. Like, there's no reason to do this as a thing that wasn't, you know, like some sort of huge major thing and do it all differently. It's like, no, it's not like you're cashing in on the name of Taco P's Original Sin to make some money and do a different thing. It's like, no, you're doing this because you want to do this.
Yeah, and I mean, this was definitely one of those if not the most talked about series of 2025, if for better or worse, right? I think some people were more like myself and really, really resonated with them. Yeah, like, fully, of course, yeah, is it tough to watch? Yeah, but like they said, this was a beautiful series and technically excellent. Some people were like, no, you know, this has no space in anime, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, but it got people talking, right? Which I think is important. So, because the last thing I want is like homogenization in anime. Like, I do feel like that, you know, I've said this phrase before in some episodes, like, Taco P can only be done after a manga. It can only be done as anime. Like, there's no way, in my opinion, you could live action this and have it be believable. Because, in my opinion, you're not going to be able to get child actors that good. Like, that convincing to me.
Well, especially because, like, part of it hinges on this, a lot of these kind of anime tropes that it's playing off of.
Yeah, right. Very much so. Again, the Doraemon magical and Taco P in and of himself just being this weird thing, and he himself is always animated differently than everything else in the show, right? Constantly. And even when they get back to the happy planet, right? Like, that's when like Dylan was talking about. Like, it has that really weird, like, every other frame kind of style, but it looked really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, yeah, it's another planet. It should look weird, right? And,
yeah.
Like, I was totally cool with it. I think there's, to me, this benefits, again, from being an ONA, much like Gunbuster benefited from being a 6-ep OVA. Like, I feel like there's a lot of parallels. So, like, story's really tight, character development happens at a great pace, and it's really focused on a small, you know, but really good, like, cast of characters. And I really have, like, do I have criticisms of it? Yeah, but to me, the positives so far outweigh any negatives I have for it. I would recommend this with the massive asterisk of you gotta be okay with these traumatic topics of blah, 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 like I said at the beginning of the episode. Mm-hmm. And if you can deal with that, I can definitely say this will be one of the most thought-provoking things you'll watch. Otherwise, it's only going to build on existing trauma, because I'm sure for a lot of people, this is just too real for them to be able to watch it and not and to be able to stomach it. At least that's how I look at it.
I was pleasantly surprised to see that it was nominated for a bunch of stuff for the Anime Awards, for like best anime and a whole bunch of other things. So I'm like, all right, that's cool.
It
like,
won a few. I mean, for whatever yeah. it matters, it won a few of those. It didn't win, but I mean, let's be real.
Did they already do those this year?
This was, I believe, this qualified for 2025, so that was already done. Really? It aired. I mean, it's the last episode aired in August.
No, 2026 nominee. No. Like,
oh.
Anime of the Year options they have up is Apothecary Diaries Season 2, Dadadan Season 2, Gachi Kuta, Octo. MHA Final Season, The Summer Hikaru Died, and Takopi's Original Sin.
Mm. Hmm. Oh, they picked two real. Yeah, dark on some regard. It's supposed to be very dark too. So I haven't seen it, but I've heard.
Yeah, it looks like we've got a little over a week from recording before they do the awards on the 23rd.
Yeah, look at that. Yeah, 8 days, 4 hours. Huh.
Yeah. So
look at that. Well, maybe these air quotes judges will surprise me, but who knows? I don't even know if I'd feel good if it won, because then I don't know if it like feels like it's almost. Delegitimizes it or something.
No,
but
I think you would feel. I think if that one, like those other shows are good. I haven't seen all of them. Like they're good, but if Takovi won, I'd be like, all right, that's like, you know, you guys are going for the art house win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
which is what
this
it is
definitely
like.
Art.
Yeah, it's the art house. It's the art house show. Versus MHA.
Yeah, I mean, again, from a technical execution, like you, it's hard to question it. Again, it has no right to be as good and well animated as it is. Like it is very easy on the eyes when you're not looking at it in the context of the content that you're watching.
I don't know. I feel like, to be honest, I think it does kind of have a right to be this good, especially given the material. Like this would be a lot harder to watch if it looked bad. Like,
yeah.
I would agree there, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. Well, so we're already a little bit past time, but I think that's okay given the nature. So I've done a lot of talking about this today, but obviously it's because again I've never concealed the fact that I really do like the, you know, dark thought-provoking animes that go to dark places. I do really enjoy what that says about me, you know. I'll leave that to therapists, but you know, obviously I love Berserk, I love Maiden Abyss, I love this, you know. This definitely speaks to me. I do definitely understand the gravity of its content, but I think it deals with it very respectfully. And mm-hmm. to the point where I think I almost feel validated given what Dylan said about how his wife reacted to it, because her being a literal professional in that space, for her to say this is way too real for me and I don't need to see more, I'm like, yeah, okay. So the way I internalize it definitely feels validated. So mm-hmm. yeah, I guess I'll just go. We can just do final thoughts around in the circle. So I guess we can go in introduction order. So Sam, any closing thoughts?
Nothing that hasn't already been said. I mean, just to summarize my feelings, is it's a really good thing, and I think everybody should watch it if you can stomach the material. Like, basically, if you can make it through up one, you should probably finish it. Despite my complaints about the ending, like, you know, nothing's perfect. I still felt something at the end. It's not like it was, I was like, you know, yawn, dumb, sucks. You know, so that's meaningful, I think. But yeah, good.
Okay, got a good from Sam. Mike?
Yeah, I really enjoyed doesn't feel like quite the word for what okay I am to, like.
It's okay to say you enjoyed it, Mike. It doesn't speak to your approval of the content, but it just means, well, to me, it means that it spoke to you in a way that was meaningful.
Yeah,
to you.
It spoke to me despite the fact that I am, you know, kind of shorthandly mentally referring to it as now and then here in Doraemon now.
You know, I don't hate that. That's actually pretty apropos. I mean, at least. Not to hijack, but at least this one is like tearing off a Band-Aid in six eps. Like, now and then was a full season, right?
It was at least 13, if not 26. I can't remember.
Oh, we clearly need to revisit and actually do an ep on that series then. Maybe not right back to back with this.
Maybe in a while.
Yeah, let's give that a little bit.
Next
but
year.
I agree.
Let's give it a year. We can do it. Maybe past ep 100, we can consider doing it. But yeah. But yeah, I'm glad you liked it. I'm definitely cautious with my recommendation of this show, but I'm glad it spoke to you in a way that made you appreciate it. Dylan.
I'd just say I would be one of those ones I'd say like, all right, watch it, just don't do it if you're in a real bad headspace. Because otherwise you're like, oh well, I don't know, it's dark and blah blah blah. But I think there's so much good in it. It's so well done as a anime and everything, and anything that, you know, is a new show that makes the AMO Kensoku cut as one that we're like, oh, this is actually a new, it's not an original property, but it, you know, effectively is, just because it's not like it was a huge manga or anything like that. At least, you know, it wasn't even one that I was aware of, you know, one of those things there, and it's like, you know what, that makes the cut. So I say just everybody just watch it and do like I do. And whenever I finished an episode, I would go rewatch an episode of You Don't Know Gunma. And
a palate cleanser.
Yeah, yeah. Have a nice little palate cleanse at the end, or watch a little bit of, you know, whatever dumb anime jork show you need to watch a little bit of afterwards to clear your head, and that's fine.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. Definitely not something to watch when you're already in a dark place. But I will say that this isn't one of those cliche shows where it's dark and constantly dark and only gets darker. It sprinkles in levity and a cadence that I think makes it palatable for most people. I feel like to the audience that the fact that it was nominated as, you know, with the content that it has, as well as being a 6-ep ONA, which is a very odd episode count by today's standards, should kind of speak to how, I would say, quality it is. So, you know, given everything we discussed, you know, I'm definitely more okay recommending this with some certain asterisks again.
And as my last thing, I definitely also appreciated that it was 6 episodes. Like, I don't think I could have done 12 episodes of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the being 6 episodes was probably a big reason why I think it's good, is because it's like tearing off a Band-Aid so you can heal faster. Is the analogy I use. So, yeah. That's it for Takopi. So, with that, this is AMO Kenzoku, signing off. Sadaba.